Chapter 11. The Bitter Angels of Our Hearts. Limit of Kindness. Here for you. Freightership Antaeus, Jovian Gulf.
Signal contact. Distance adjusting.
The tech priest's drone buzzed across the bridge. The watch officer, who had been nodding off, jerked upright, blinking. Vec had been sitting in a vacant helm cradle, trying to stave off the alternating fatigue and nerves.
"What is it?"
asked Vec.
"Uncertain," said the tech priest.
She had come up from the engine decks and wired herself into the helm and sensor instruments after they had broken from Uranus's orbit. That had reassured Vec a little. The tech priest, who he thought was called Chi 32 Beta, was cold and unfeeling, but she did not seem to sleep, nor to be as open to panic as the all-too-human bridge crew.
"It is a small void craft. Fast, and its signal signature is tenuous," continued Chi 32 Beta. "If I was extending analysis to informed speculation, I might venture that it was equipped with counter-auspex systems."
"It's hiding," said Vec.
"That analysis is not accurate. It is less that it is hiding, and rather that we do not have the eyes to see it."
"Military?"
"Almost a certainty," said the tech priest.
"Has it seen us? Is it coming closer?" he asked.
"To the first question, I would theorize that if its sacred machine systems are enough to fog the fidelity of our own auspex, then it will be more than blessed with the ability to have been aware of us for some time."
The tech priest paused. Vec saw cogs turn inside the sculpted lips of her brushed steel mask.
"As to whether it is closing, passing, or attenuating, I have no data."
Vec bit his lip. He thought of calling for Coln, but the brevet captain of the Antaeus had withdrawn further and further over the days since they ran from Uranus. When she spoke, it was often as though she were not fully aware or present, and when she was focused, she seethed with barely suppressed rage. She was seen on the bridge less and less, and Vec was happy not to know where it was she was going. But he was no void officer.
"Go and find Submistress Coln,"
he called to one of the junior deck officers, who looked barely old enough to hold rank.
"Get her back to the bridge now."
The officer nodded and left. Vec closed his eyes and rubbed them with the heels of his hands. A headache had been growing in the space behind his eyes for hours now. The pain was becoming sharper as the adrenaline of the first days of their flight drained, and they had pushed further towards Jupiter and the system core beyond. Everyone was the same, though. He had heard the crew muttering to each other about their dreams after they returned from the few hours most of them had managed to sleep. Everything was fraying. There had been incidents, shouted arguments between superiors and subordinates. This was a civilian ship, a short-range freighter. Its crew were not military, and the habits of authority and command were barely surviving this new reality. And the refugees in the hold. He had gone down to see them every day until today. The last time he had stepped into the holds, they had swarmed, not to him, but towards the door, and there had been a blank-eyed desperation to them. Refugees. Isn't that what they all were now?
"Signal intensity altering,"
said Chi 32 Beta.
"Secondary signal return detaching from the primary. Plotting location and vector."
"What's happening?"
he asked.
"A second return has separated from the first. It is smaller and not sensor-baffled. In more easily passed terms, the ship that we detected has launched a shuttle, or lighter-sized void craft. It is visible to our auspex. I am using it to extrapolate data on the primary return."
The tech priest was silent for a second. Vec heard a metallic whir from inside her mask that made him think of a sharp inhalation.
"Recommend brace condition and immediate internal lockdown."
The officers of the bridge woke from lethargy into panicked motion. Crimson lights began to blink and strobe. Vec started towards the tech priest, but she was already calling out.
"They are very close. They must have been gaining on us for hours, and the smaller craft that they have launched is approaching directly and swiftly."
"What is it?"
I would speculate that it is a class of assault craft.
The tech priest rotated her head on her shoulders to look fully at Vec. Her eyes were two circles of crystal-brushed steel.
They mean to board us.
How long?
Vec asked. And as though in reply, a machine voice boomed from vox speakers across the bridge.
Brace! 10 seconds to impact! Brace!
Vec turned to look at the viewport, in time to see a sleek shape fall on them like a fiery arrow shot from the night.
All those people gone. Just gone. And Vec did not even pause. Pulled a gun. Yes, he pulled a gun. And what choice did you have then? You had to. He left the captain. He killed her. What choice did you have? None. And all for his brats. All to keep two rich little brats alive. How many died? He killed them. Yes, Vec killed them. Not you. You gave the order to break from the dock, but he would have shot you. You had no choice.
Down in the quiet, Zadia Colne, once sub-mistress and now brevet captain of the system freighter Antaeus, listened to the thoughts roll and roar through her head. The passage was dark. The pistol in her hands hung in her fingers, still smoking, the slide open on an empty breech. Fat brass shell cases littered the floor around where she crouched. Further off, half folded in shadow, lay the bodies. 5 of them, or maybe more, she was not sure. For a second, she caught them out of the edge of her eye. She'd had no choice. She'd been walking the decks. They had come out of nowhere as she was sealing the bulkhead, and she had pulled the gun and... Colne glanced up at the sealed door across the passage. She had come down to the decks to check that all of them were secure. No, that was a lie. She had just wanted to get away from the bridge, with its stink of fear, and Vec and his bodyguard watching everything like they didn't trust Colne. The thought of them brought the rage again, spearing up through her, sucking in terror as fuel, like a firestorm drawing in air. She hadn't asked for this. How dare they doubt her? She was the one who had to give the orders to keep the ship moving through the void. She had spent most of her 4 decades on this ship, or one of its sisters. Ore and supplies, back and forwards through the circles of Uranus's moons, again and again, predictable and certain. A mundane life, filled with boredom. But there had been the temple, the quiet gatherings in the silence of the docks off Miranda. She had been flattered to be asked to join, then intrigued. The frisson of secrecy had spiced the thought that she was, for once in her life, doing something not permitted, something special. It had been just as mundane after a while, though. Men and women in tattered hoods and nonsense words spoken to recognise each other. Tokens and coins and meetings, which were half ritual and half the kind of talk you could have in any dock drinking hole. Her eyes settled on one of the corpses. Its hand was open. Clear stars, but it looked still alive. What was it they had shouted before she shot? Food? Something about food? What had she done? No. No, no, it was not her fault. What was Vec thinking? Almost 1,000 refugees on a ship with provisions for its crew alone? Vec should have known. They had nothing. Hunger had begun to bite after only days. Soon it would make the refugees in the holds go further than this passage. They had just come running out of the dark, and she had... They should not have been there.
It's not your fault.
The voice froze her. Her eyes fastened on the dead refugees. She heard the thump of her heart. Then she laughed, the sound echoing and then collapsing into tears. It was her voice. Of course it was. Hers. The word had come from her thoughts into her mouth without her realizing.
It's not your fault, Zadia Colne.
She heard herself speak, and felt the words puff into the air, cold and glittering with frost.
It's not your fault.
She heard the footsteps then, slow and deliberate, walking towards her across the deck. She tried to look up. She could not look up. She could not move. The beat of her heart had stopped. The frost of her breath hung in the air, glittering dust hanging before her eyes.
You had no choice then, and you have none now.
There was a shape at the edge of her sight, a shape like the shadow of something that walked like a man. She wanted to close her eyes. She wanted to look away. Her eyes stayed open as the figure stopped just next to her.
But you did have one choice.
She could smell burnt meat, and something that brought to mind the incense they had burned in the temple on Miranda. A temple. A temple that was just a room with some candles and marks scratched on the floor, and bowls set under a flow of water from a broken pipe.
You all have a choice of which angels to listen to.
Frost was creeping over her limbs and up her neck.
You can listen to those voices that you know are true, and which will keep you safe, even if it means that you must be just a small flame, rather than the light of eternity.
Blood. She could smell blood and water.
Or you can listen to all the hate and rage and resentment that you carry like a parent does a child.
The thing shifted, and she could see it now.
And all of you humans always make the same choice.
Something sharp hooked under her chin and pulled it up. Two yellow eyes looked down at her.
You always choose to listen to the bitter angels of your hearts.
She could not draw breath to scream.
And we listen.
You are from Terra?
Asked the boy.
Yes,
replied Mercedes. I was born there. She moved the glass tile across a slot in the metal game board. The boy frowned at it. His sister sat curled on a chair, eyes sunk in a sullen face, listening. She was older than the boy by at least half a decade, maybe a little more. She was called Maury, and he was Noon. They were Vex children. They had found their way into the room she was sleeping in 2 days ago, and seemed to have adopted her as a curiosity, a distraction from the situation they all found themselves in. She had told them a story, and the boy at least had come back for more. Vec had let them, and the bodyguard, Axinia, had come with them, a cold-eyed shadow at the edge of the room. Mercedes talked and told stories as the Antaeus plunged on through the dark of the gulf between Uranus and Jupiter. Apparently the gas giants were at a stage in their orbital cycle that put Jupiter on a direct course between Uranus and the inner system. There were no explosions now, no rush and boom of sudden events, just the slow, grinding passing of moments as the pressure rose inside the thoughts of all those on board.
"What's it like, the throne world? What's it like?"
asked Noon. Mercedes shrugged and smiled.
"I don't know what it's like now. I haven't been there for a long time. But do you want to know the truth?"
She leaned across the board of coloured tiles and lowered her voice to a stage whisper.
"I always thought it was ugly. There is this haze in the sky. There used to be seas once, longer ago than anyone can remember. Now there is just dust and stink. Lots of buildings grown too high. And there are people, more people than you can imagine."
"Where did you go?"
asked Maury from across the room. Mercedes looked around at the girl, who had barely moved but was looking at her with a sharp gaze.
"If you were away from Terra for a long time, where did you go?"
Mercedes held the girl's gaze, thinking about how to answer.
"I went to see the Imperium being made."
"What does that mean?"
asked the girl.
"Enough questions,"
said Axinia from the corner. Mercedes looked at the bodyguard, then back at the coloured tiles on the board, then up at Noon.
"I think you might have won," said Mercedes to Noon.
Alarms screamed out all around them. The assault pod struck the Antaeus on its spine. Claws snapped down from the pod's flanks, dug in and pulled its bulk close against the hull. Rings of drill teeth began to rotate. Melter beams fired at point-blank range. The skin of the hull bubbled and oozed orange. Shaped charges in the pod's base fired. The blast punched into the blistering metal and turned it into a jet of white-hot liquid. The pod rocked, but its blade legs dug deeper, pulling the spinning teeth of its maw down into the glowing wound. The second set of charges fired and tore through the last inches of the ship's hull. A shock wave ripped down the passageways near the breach. Half-sealed hatches ripped off their hinges. A lone crewman, close to the impact point, was slammed into the wall and became a broken doll of crushed meat and shattered bone. An iris hatch, set between the pod's drill teeth, snapped open. Figures dropped through. Crimson void armor bulked their forms. Pressure hoses snaked from the canisters on their backs to their domed helms. In the staterooms towards the ship's stern, Mercedes came up off the floor to standing as the breaching blast sent a shiver down the hull. Axinia was already in motion, scooping up the two children and making for the door in a blur. The bodyguard had a long-barreled pistol in one hand. "Axinia!" called Mercedes. There was something wrong, something blurring at the edges of awareness that Mercedes could not focus on. The skin on the back of her neck and arms was prickling. In her mind's eye, she could see the dream image of the wolf smiling at her with its sharp, bloody teeth.
"Don't go! There is something—"
The bodyguard turned, keying the door.
"I need to reach Master Vec."
The door opened, and she glanced back at Mercedes, the mask of control slipping for a second to show only contempt.
"You brought this down on us. They can have you."
She turned. Noon's eyes were wide as he looked back at her from beside Axinia's grasp.
"No,"
called Mercedes. She was shaking, the tremor running out from her core like a charge searching for a way out. In her mind, the image of the symbol she had seen in the dream with Keeler rose. Planets and signs, symbols and meanings. The marks had changed, had shifted. They were glowing with heat, weeping smoke. And as clearly as if it had been shouted in her ear, she knew that it was a warning.
"There is something else! Someone coming! Don't go!"
Axinia looked like she would not even pause. Then she stopped, pulled a compact las pistol from inside her robes and threw it onto the floor at Mercedes' feet.
"Consider that the limit of my kindness."
Then she was gone, pulling the children with her into the flashing lights of the corridor outside. Mercedes looked at the gun for a second, swaying as the sense of danger and threat poured through her. Then she hissed a curse, bent down, picked up the gun, and ran after the bodyguard. Vec was already running as the assault pod detonated its second charge. The jolt ran through the deck. Shouts swallowed the alarms. Some of the bridge crew were reaching for sidearms they had drawn from the Antaeus' weapon locker. Vec had a lasgun. His hands fumbled on the arming stud as he went for the door off the bridge. Sweat poured from him. Breath soared from his lungs. His bulk shook beneath his clothes. Someone might have called after him, but he did not hear or stop. All he could think of was the children. The children he had left two decks down, close to the breach.
"The Emperor protects."
That was what Sadia, his wife, had said when she had first introduced him to the temple of the Saviour Emperor.
"He always has, and he always will."
He went down the spiral of stairs from the helm platform. He saw a guard, but the man turned and fled as Vec shouted at him.
"But how can that be true when billions die?" he had asked. "How can there be a war if he protects?"
His wife had shrugged.
"If there were not the dark and the chance of loss, what need would there be for him to protect us?"
Another jolt shook the deck. The walls rang like a struck gong. He was panting, the sweat pouring into his eyes.
"He protects! He protects!"
he panted, and echoed in his head.
"Please let him protect them."
He reached the door of the bridge. There was shouting behind him, the machine burble of the tech priest. The doors blew apart in a spray of shrapnel. Vec was blasted backwards. Something struck him in the gut. He tumbled. Air rushed from his lungs, and he was falling, dimly aware of his hands still clutching the lasgun. Another blow followed to his ribs as he collided with the support pillar and tumbled to the floor. There were figures around him and above him, armoured figures pouring through the opening, red armour, domed helms with black slots for eyes, squat guns fuming static. Beams of light flashed out. Vec tried to rise, tried to move forwards, tried to bring the gun up.
"You should trust more," Sadia had said.
None of his limbs would move. Nothing felt like anything.
"That is the root of faith. Not just belief, but trust."
The armoured figures moved up, firing with every step, swift but steady. Vec thought that the screaming was fading, that the world was soft and fuzzed and leaking red at the edge of his sight.
"There is a plan, and he watches all of us."
"Cleared,"
came a machine-distorted voice from somewhere out of sight.
"All you need to do is trust."
Vec could see Noon and Morrie's faces in his mind, more clear than the red shadows that moved close.
"This one's alive," said a voice from close by.
Vec suddenly realised how quiet everything had become. The lights still blinked, but there were no alarms, no shouts.
"Just trust," he had asked. "That does not seem like much."
"It is everything," she had said. "It is everything, my love."
He was looking up into the black eye slot, set into a crimson lacquered helm.
"The Emperor,"
he managed, hearing the gurgle and rasp in his own words. The barrel of the gun eclipsed the sight of the room. He could see the scorching inside its muzzle.
"The Emperor."
Mercedes saw the gunfire from around the corner. She slowed, crouching low against the wall. She gripped the gun tight. Rounds were whipping past, shot pellets sparking off pipes and grates. She was breathing hard. A bitter taste filled her mouth and nose. She looked back at the way she had come. Blast doors had sealed behind her. Could she open them? If she could, where would she go? What about Nihlus? Where was the navigator? A child's cry jerked her head up. Another blast of shot. Another cry. The thought of going back vanished. Mercedes snatched a look around the corner. The next door was only 20 paces away. It was a small ovoid opening. The two children crouched behind a projecting pipe halfway between Mercedes and the door. Morrie hugged her brother close as a shot sparked off the wall above their heads. Axinia was beside the open door, pistols in hand, shooting through the hatch as guns barked from the dark beyond. She crouched back as a fresh squall of shot ripped up the corridor. Mercedes caught her eye and thought she saw a curse form on the bodyguard's lips. There was a deeper boom from beyond the open hatch, and a bolt round ripped down the corridor and exploded on the wall opposite the corner. Mercedes saw the gleam of red armour in the muzzle flash just before she ducked back. There were figures advancing on the other side of the hatch from Axinia. The bodyguard and the children were trapped.
"Mercedes!"
shouted Axinia.
"I hear you!"
she shouted back. Another bolt burned down the corridor. Mercedes heard the chattering bark of Axinia's pistols.
"Your shuttle!"
shouted the bodyguard.
"It's 2 decks down. Key command override for the launch doors is Juno."
"I understand,"
Mercedes shouted back. And she did.
"Get the children, and then get to the shuttle."
Mercedes nodded. All thoughts of Nihlus, of greater purposes and of final ends, had become very distant. A high ringing was rising in her head and ears. Her limbs were suddenly shaking. Axinia held her gaze for a heartbeat more.
"Get ready,"
she called. Mercedes nodded again, her mouth and throat dry.
"Now!"
shouted Axinia, and half rose, pistols blazing through the hatch. Mercedes started up. She made it in 2 strides. A trooper in heavy red armour was already at the hatch. Whether Axinia had realised how close they were, or if they had simply waded through her fire to reach the door, Mercedes would never know. She ducked to the side of the passage as the gun in the crimson trooper's hands boomed. A round tore a hole in the floor where she had been. Axinia did not pause. Her first shot hit the crimson-clad trooper in the chest. The second hit the same mark a second later and punched through the red armour. The trooper tumbled back. Blood flared bright. Axinia twitched aside as a beam of light stabbed through the doorway. Mercedes heard the air hiss as the beam pulsed. Axinia was turning, spinning low with the momentum of her dodge, to kick her heel into the crotch of the next figure through the door. Axinia came up, a blade in hand. The crimson trooper brought its hand up to block the thrust, but the point of the blade slid up under the chin of its helm. Axinia activated the blade's power field, and the trooper's skull exploded in its helm. The corpse began to fall. Axinia let go of the dagger, yanked the pins from the grenades hanging from the trooper's bandolier, and kicked the corpse back through the doorway before it could hit the floor. She ducked to the side, scooping up the knife as she moved. Beams of light snapped through the door at her. Mercedes met the bodyguard's gaze. There were scorch marks on Axinia's clothes and a spreading dark red stain on her stomach. Rage burned in her eyes as they met Mercedes.
"Get the children to the shuttle!" she shouted.
An orange blast wave punched through the open door. Pieces of burning fabric and broken armour scattered across the decking. Smoke clotted the air. Mercedes yelled in pain as the pressure broke over her. Beams lit the smoke pall, strobing out of time with the red pulse of alert lumens. Axinia snapped a shot off through the hatch. For a second, in the red flash of light, Mercedes saw pain contort the bodyguard's face.
"Go!"
Axinia shouted, and fired around the door again. Mercedes pushed up from the wall and ran to the two children huddled beside the pipe. Noon was weeping, wet tears pouring down his cheeks. Morrie was wide-eyed and breathing hard as she looked up at Mercedes. The girl said something, but the ringing was still filling Mercedes' ears, blurring into her skull. She felt like she was going to vomit.
"Come with me,"
said Mercedes, reaching for Morrie. The girl flinched back.
"We need to go, Morrie."
The girl hesitated, then nodded and was up, grabbing hold of Mercedes' hand and pulling her brother up with the other. Axinia fired through the door as Mercedes and the children ran for the turn in the passage, back the way Mercedes had come. They came round the corner. Behind them, energy beams snapped through the air. Mercedes could see the blast door at the end of the passage, 30 paces. 30 paces, and then... The lights on the distant door's lock blinked to green. Mercedes' stride faltered. The blast door began to open, pulling back into the passage walls. She heard a snarl of pain from back where Axinia was crouched beside the other door out of the corridor. Energy beams were smacking the passage walls. Morrie was still running forwards, her hand now pulling on Mercedes. There were figures on the other side of the door ahead, their gloss armour red. Mercedes yanked back on Morrie's hand as the first crimson-armoured trooper stepped into sight, gun rising. Morrie saw, her mouth opening wide to scream. The trooper fired as Mercedes pulled them down behind a wall bracing. Hard shot rang off the walls and floor. More troopers poured into the passage from the other end, from their only way out. Mercedes could see back to where Axinia now sat on the floor beside the hatch. The dark stains had spread across the bodyguard's torso, and a wet chunk was missing from her right upper thigh. She was reloading her pistol, face set and hard. Mercedes felt the weight of the pistol in her own hand and fired two shots off. The snap of recoil jerked the shots high. The world was roaring with gunfire, closing in, pressing closed like a vice. Morrie was shaking, her brother howling. And in her mind, all she could think of was the moon on water, of sharp teeth and a pair of yellow eyes. Words hissed in a dream blew into her thoughts.
"We are coming for you. We know. We are here for you."
Panic punched through her, flooding her with adrenaline. She needed to run. She needed to get away. She half rose. Morrie yanked her back.
"What are you doing?"
shouted the girl. Mercedes tried to shake her off. She needed to run, the instinct so pure and raw that it left her other thoughts shouting in its wake.
"They will try to stop you," said Keela's face in the dream. "Old friends and enemies alike. They will come for you."
She tried to rise from the cover of the support pillar again. A pair of crimson troopers were 4 paces away, guns levelled, fingers on triggers. Time became an instant caught between drawn breaths. Mercedes could see it all. The armoured soldiers advancing, the beams and shot rounds threading the gloom, the blur of Axinia as she tried to rise and face the figures coming through the other hatch. And then she saw the shadow. It was standing in the open blast doors that the second squad of troopers had just poured through. It was still, upright, a freeze frame on a picked stream. The ringing in her head was building, and all she could think of was the message she carried in her memory, and the smell of wet fur and blood and frost. The troopers were still advancing, their fingers squeezing back on triggers as the passing instants blinked in time with the alert lights. Red, black, red, black, red, black, red. The shadow was behind them. Black. And now the shadow was next to them, and Mercedes could hear the siren scream in her head, beating with the blink of seconds. Red. Blood sprayed out. The troopers were turning, and the shadow was amongst them, moving in jerks like a broken picked feed. Black. Axinia was still on the floor by the hatch, her pistol frozen in her hand. There was red frost climbing the walls, bodies flying back, broken, pulped. Red. The shadow was standing still now, washed in gore, its head turning to Mercedes, and she could see the face within shadow, eyes stained red in the black-veined skull of Submistress Colne.
"We are here for you,"
said the thing, and it reached out fingers that stretched into shadows through the air, and all Mercedes could think of was running in dreams through dark woods and the howls rising behind her.
"We are the..."
The last blast ripped the side of Colne's skull off. The shadow-wrapped body jerked back. Mercedes fired again and again, stepping forwards as the thing staggered and the blasts ripped through it. It juddered, flesh and blood shuddering as it fell. She stood over it, still, panting, the charge pack depletion light blinking red on the pistol in her hand. The only sound was the patter of blood falling to the deck from the ceiling above.